going to be looking especially for more oil, but also for the appearance that he's breaking the sanctions.
The North Korean leader may be about to meet Mr. Putin. This is Thursday, the 18th of April, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, you'll hear the latest from the Indonesian election. A new study confirms what most had thought, that living in a disaster area is not good for your financial health. And we'll take you to Colorado, where learning a second language has brought a community together. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Since emerging from his international isolation just over a year ago, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has been a very busy man. Kim has met twice with U.S. President Donald Trump, three times with South Korean President Moon Jae-in, four times with Chinese President Xi Jinping, and once with Vietnamese President Nguyen Phu Trong. One name missing from that list, Russian President Vladimir Putin. But that soon could change. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov confirmed earlier this week that preparations for a long-rumored Kim-Putin summit are underway. The meeting could happen as soon as next week, according to South Korea's semi-official Yonhap news agency. Joining us now is Bruce Bennett, senior defense analyst for the RAND Corporation. Bruce, thanks for being with us. Why this meeting? Why this summit?
Well, we have to remember back to the 1980s. Back in the 80s, North Korea was absolutely expert in trading off China versus Russia. They would get China to offer them something and then push Russia to give them something in exchange, even a little bit more, and so forth. Kim is really trying the same thing. He's not sure what he's going to be able to get from each country. He doesn't have the leverage that his grandfather did in the 80s. And so he's been hoping to get sanctions relief from the U.S., didn't get it, hoping to get that relief from China, didn't get it, hoping that the South Koreans would give it to him. He certainly has the South Koreans anxious to do so, but not really in a position. So he's now trying to pursue it with the Russians.
What kind of relationship has there been between Russia and Pyongyang?
Well, Russia's not really in a position economically to provide the kind of ongoing subsidy to North Korea that it did in the 80s. In fact, they had to cut way back and haven't really supported North Korea that much. Nevertheless, they have apparently provided oil through at-sea transfers and other means. So they've given some support to the North. Now I think Kim Jong-un is going to be looking especially for more oil, but also for the appearance that he's breaking the sanctions so that he can get better support from China and South Korea on also breaking the sanctions.
And what is in it for Vladimir Putin and Russia?
Well, Putin, in part, likes to be the great spoiler. He likes to have the appearance of being important internationally, of being able to make a difference. And so he looks at this and says, well, this is one area in the world where I can look like I'm important. But it's also a case where the very far east of Russia is an area which is not doing too well economically, and where maybe he can generate some new business or situation to help out his country as well.
I did read that the United States has sent its number one Korea negotiator, Stephen Biegun, to Moscow. So what does that portend as far as Washington's position on this is concerned?
Well, I imagine, and I don't know for sure, but I imagine that what President Trump has tried to do is to get Mr. Biegun to emphasize to the Soviets that they are under obligation to do what the UN Security Council resolutions call for. There are U.S. Sanctions that the U.S. could implement against Russia if it violates the sanctions environment. So I suspect he's really there to try to emphasize on the Russians that it's not in our common interest for Russia to get to let North Korea off the hook and provide it with substantial aid until North Korea actually does begin to denuclearize, which it has not.
Russia has broken some international sanctions with the DPRK. Is that not true?
Oh, that is certainly true, especially on oil.
And what kind of repercussion has there been internationally to Russia, if any?
Not a whole lot. I think, you know, there have been some people who have talked about the Russian action, but in terms of any serious punishment of Russia, it hasn't happened. That could be part, though, of what Biegun took to Moscow. The United States Congress authorized the president to implement secondary sanctions against companies or individuals who've been involved in breaking the primary sanctions against North Korea, where if they work with North Korea, they can't work with the United States. And that could be painful to quite a number of Russian companies. That's something that the president could decide to implement.
Bruce Bennett is senior defense analyst for the RAND Corporation. Bruce, thanks again for being with us.
Happy to help.
These are the top Asia stories you'll find right now at voanews.com. China's economic growth held steady in the latest quarter at 6.4% despite a tariff war with Washington, according to the government. The China-backed rebels of the United Hua State Army in eastern Myanmar held a huge parade Wednesday to mark 30 years since they negotiated a ceasefire with the Myanmar Army. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un inspected a flight drill of Korean People Army's Air Force and Air Defense, according to state media. Foxconn founder Terry Gao announces that he's running for Taiwan's presidency, shaking up a race that will determine whether the island moves closer to China. We have expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues now. Indonesians voted in national and regional elections Wednesday, with President Jokowi Widodo widely expected to win a second term. The so-called quick counts from reputable survey organizations that use a sample of polling stations have been reliable in past elections. With an average of 80% of sample polling stations counted, the five survey organizations showed Widodo winning 54-56% of the vote, a modest improvement on his 2014 showing. Paul Maruli is a 43-year-old taxi driver. He was happy with his vote.
For my choice in a president, number one, it's a good loyalty, religious, and for prospect for Indonesia is very good, sir.
For many, it was a family day out. Radhi Rasjid, a 48-year-old mining executive, said voting was smooth despite concerns over galput. That's a term used to describe deliberately spoiled ballots and voters who abstain, particularly among millennials.
I think the turnout for the younger voters are increasing now compared to, say, 10 years ago. I think the issues are more relevant, so I hope they take a bigger part in our democracy process.
There are 60 million voters under the age of 30, and surveys have indicated that many could abstain and skew the final result. But retired three-star general Ian Santoso Perdanakusuma told VOA voting has gone well.
I'm happy. Everything is in a good for the nation. I didn't see any movement that's against the security. I'm happy that it will be good in the next year, in the next 5 years.
Voting numbers peaked at around 11 o'clock a.m. local time, and counting got underway at 1 p.m. after polling stations closed. Official results are not expected to be known for several weeks now. Jokowi went into this poll as the clear favorite, carrying a 20 percentage point lead over his rival, Prabowo Subianto, following 5 years at the helm, where he was praised for delivering on badly needed big-ticket infrastructure projects and a national health scheme. The pair had squared off in five nationally televised debates, with most political pundits judging the contest about even. And analysts say Jokowi needs to win with a comfortable margin of 8 to 10% if he is to avoid protest and legal challenges by the opposition camp. Prabowo has already raised the prospect of ghost voters and potential rigging in the fifth ballot to be held since the downfall of President Suharto in 1998 and the outbreak of deadly protest across the archipelago of more than 18,000 islands. Kevin Evans, director of the Australia-Indonesian Center, said everybody who loses pro forma takes their case to the Constitutional Court and then they accept the verdict afterwards. I see no reason to see anything different this time.
People like to talk about Armageddon kind of outcomes here. They've been predicting violence every election since I've been here, and the only violence was during the pre-democratic period. In the democratic period, it hasn't been the case.
There were reports that voting was stopped in two districts in the troubled far eastern province of Papua, where residents were arguing with police and ballot papers were unavailable. And as the polls closed and early counting began, online speculation was rampant that Prabowo had performed better than expected, with one tweet claiming he expected to win 63% of the popular vote. Another said the Jokowi camp expected to win by a margin of just 2 to 3%. However, analysts cast doubt on those figures. Happening now in Asia, a new United Nations report has documented a modest decline in torture allegations in Afghan prisons, but noted its ongoing concern at the disturbingly high number of conflict-related detainees still alleging serious abuses. Make sure you stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us. Children in disaster-prone regions are twice as likely to be living in chronic poverty, according to new research. The report from the London-based Overseas Development Institute looks at the impact of natural disasters across different stages of a child's life in India and Kenya, and warns that climate change is making such incidents more frequent and more intense. More from Henry Ridgewell.
Kenya's Turkana County, where the rains no longer fall. The drought is having a devastating impact on the most vulnerable people. Mother of four, Christine, says when we wake up in the morning, our children have nothing to eat. They stay hungry all day and eat only in the evening in the event that we have food stocks, like this bag of maize. There is nothing else to eat. The Overseas Development Institute report combines data on disasters, climate change, and child poverty for the first time. Emma Lovell is co-author of the report.
Usually after a disaster, we hear about a number of people who've died or economic losses, but we don't tend to hear about what the longer-term impacts of the disaster are. And this research is really exciting because it looks at the impact of disasters and climate change on child well-being and longer-term development outcomes.
The researchers analysed the impact of natural disasters on children and adolescents at different stages of their life. Again, Emma Lovell.
Disasters are more likely to affect the most vulnerable groups, and disasters can also widen existing inequalities that are within society. So if I give an example, if after a disaster a child may be pulled out of school in order to help support the family and household, but this may have an impact on their educational achievement, which longer term may then influence their employment opportunities.
The study also looked at the impact of flooding events in Bihar State, India. It found that chronically poor mothers had fewer prenatal visits in disaster-prone areas than elsewhere. Diarrhea prevalence was also higher, while fewer poor adolescents were enrolled in school where natural disasters were common.
And it's essential that governments and global actors help to promote systems and services that can support people in these events.
The report's authors urge governments and aid agencies to build resilience against natural disasters and to take account of the impact on children in the poorest and most vulnerable populations. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This is VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English, and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
Happening now in Asia, word that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un oversaw the testing of a new type of tactical guided weapon Wednesday, according to state media in North Korea. They did not describe exactly what the weapon was, including whether it was a missile or another type of weapon, but tactical implies a short-range weapon as opposed to the long-range ballistic missiles that have been seen as a threat to the United States. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Children in disaster-prone regions are twice as likely to be living in chronic poverty, according to new research. The report from the London-based Overseas Development Institute looks at the impact of natural disasters across different stages of a child's life in India and Kenya, and warns that climate change is making such incidents more frequent and more intense. A recent report... the World Health Organization says governments can improve the health of their citizens by using digital technology to make health systems more efficient and responsive to their patients. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva on the WHO's first guidelines on digital health intervention.
The United Nations says 51% of the world's population has access to broadband internet service. Chief WHO scientist Soumya Swaminathan says the increased availability and use of digital technology offers new opportunities to improve people's health. She tells VOA the technology enables people, even in the remotest settings, to leapfrog into the development of a more effective, inclusive health system. She says with the use of mobile phones, computers, and laptops, it is possible to bypass the intervening stages many countries have had to go through.
So a health worker in Congo can directly start using a mobile phone, if the government is able to provide one, to the health worker and get away from filling, 30 paper registers, which occupy about one-third of a frontline health worker's time.
The new guidelines include 10 recommendations on how governments can use digital technology for maximum impact on their health systems. A WHO scientist specializing in digital innovations and research, Garrett Mayle, says the recommendations deal with issues such as birth notification.
Knowing that a baby has been born is critical to knowing how to provide vaccinations, knowing that the mother needs different postnatal care visits. But without knowing that there was a birth that has happened, it's difficult to trigger those events in the health system.
The guidelines also address privacy concerns. They have recommendations for ensuring that sensitive data, such as issues of sexual and reproductive health, are protected and not put at risk. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This news alert from VOA Asia. More than 9,500 prisoners were ordered released Wednesday in Myanmar under a presidential amnesty, but they did not include two Pulitzer Prize-winning Reuters reporters. Official list of those to be freed are usually not made public, but activists monitor releases, especially at Yangon's Insein prison, where most important detainees are held. This is VOA Asia. It's been said that to have another language is to possess a second soul. For immigrants to the United States, that soul can be hard to get because it's often confusing and difficult to find English classes, and private lessons can be expensive. In Colorado, an award-winning group called Intercambio trains volunteers to teach English as a second language to immigrant students from around the world. The lessons take place in classroom settings or in the immigrant's home. In this process, volunteers and their students often become lasting friends, building meaningful connections and a deeper soul for the entire community. From Longmont, Colorado, Shelley Schlender reports.
At the Intercambio Community Center in Longmont, Colorado, Deepa McCauley is teaching immigrants how to talk about health in English.
Running a fever doesn't mean that you're running. Running a fever is the temperature. Yes, exactly. The thermometer moves.
McCauley students come from around the globe. She doesn't have a teaching background, but was trained by Intercambio. Executive Director Lee Shanis says the program is designed to help community volunteers teach language to immigrants.
We created our own training materials because we found that a lot of the materials out there were not directly geared towards volunteer teachers. And we've had 5,000 volunteer teachers since we started, you know, 18 years ago. And volunteers are capable of doing an amazing job, but they also need something ready to go, and also really practical and relevant.
How's he feeling?
Depressed. Depressed.
Oh, my child is depressed.
From the discrimination.
Yep. Depression can come from discrimination. My father, in India, he was an engineer. He came to America. He was collecting carts in the grocery store. He was depressed.
Change in life.
Big change in life.
Deepa is awesome. She was, you know, one of our many teachers who had zero experience as a volunteer teaching English when she first came in, and we've seen huge advancements in her quality of teaching and her quality of getting her students engaged.
One of the main reasons I wanted to teach English is because my parents were first generation immigrants who didn't speak English, and they had a really hard time. And they wouldn't have had a hard time if they had a place like Intercambio. This is a frown. So somebody says, I see your frown. This is that right there, that's a frown.
My name is Silvia Gonzalez Nava. When I left my country, I didn't speak at all English, at all.
If my grandma only knew Spanish, I wouldn't know what she was saying.
That's why I speak English, because I want to have a good conversation with you.
Her English is getting better.
A lot better.
The volunteer teachers and their students both say the meaningful connections they have at their Intercambio classes build lasting community connections. For VOA News, I'm Shelley Schlender in Longmont, Colorado.
You want to drink tea, right?
We continue on VOA Asia. Tech toys used to be their own category at the toy store, but just as technology has become unavoidable in day-to-day life, so too has it become more integrated into toys for our children. Tina Trin has more.
Whether they're soft and cuddly or full of purple slime, toys are the currency of childhood. At a trade show in New York, that includes techie toys, which for today's digital natives are really just toys.
Tech is not a trend anymore. We're seeing it infused in all different types of play, whether it's an interactive pet, whether it's AR. We're seeing that a lot across the board, all different types of toys.
Take Lego's Hidden Side building set, which pairs with an augmented reality app.
Through the app, you actually scan the set, and it really comes alive. You're able to determine which parts of the set are haunted and capture ghosts and collect items. So it's a really interactive experience that's a little bit different than how other people are doing AR, because you still have one hand in the physical and one hand in the digital.
Even the classic drawing game Pictionary gets a digital update.
Instead of using a piece of paper, we're going to use this, an air pen, and it's going to be the air in front of you that you're drawing on.
Pictionary Air uses light recognition technology.
There's no need to pair it to your device once you've got it. This is literally a battery and an LED, and it's going to track it on screen for you.
Camel.
This vehicle can go up to 9 miles an hour.
Tech Mods by Hot Wheels lets kids aged 8 through 16 build a car that's also Bluetooth enabled.
This is an RC vehicle that you can control from your smartphone, and you can also use it as a controller for your smart device.
And in a move that's more tech startup than toy company, Tech Mods will be available first to backers on the crowdfunding platform Indiegogo.
They get to see it before everybody else does. Not only that, we get to have a dialogue with them. We can learn about how they're responding to it. We're really excited about that.
These toys bring new meaning to the phrase early adopter. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com. Our thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Nelson Lopes. Managing Editor Diane Gallen, our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Ira Melman. Have a great day.